taking over in the next 2 hours. But I wanted to make one more little note and then talk to him for a few minutes and hand the baton. I forgot. We are on the edge of the red. All our legal battles in the backup studios and all the things we're doing. Thank you for being supportive. Thank you for what you're doing. But InfoWarsStore.com is still up and operating. And there's no extra funds over there. So even the bad guys get this place, they're not getting any money. That's what's hilarious about it. But we need money just for payroll and just to operate. So through the bankruptcy and stuff, they're not been letting us buy a new product. But we convinced the receiver at the state level to bring in enough money until they're able to try to do a sale. Because we shut down, it hurts the value. And they want to try to sell down the middle of January, they're saying. And everything always takes longer. And now the big question is, will they let good guys that want to come in and buy, keep us on air, do it, or will it be rigged like it was in the federal court and the judge caught him and it got shut down? That was the federal trustee from the Department of Justice, that huge scandal over a year ago. Remember all that? So that's just a snapshot of it. But we did get authorized to do these beautiful limited edition posters, and I came up with two, maybe show the B-roll, that basically have a crusader theme about, you know, make no deals with evil and defend the West. Those are great posters. You can just go to InfoWarsStore.com and see them. Those are the two I designed there on each side, and they're big. Rob Dew, they did a screenshot, the folks at Bigley before, of that, of me in the studio, and it's posterized. It's beautiful. It's got John Paul Jones' quote, "I have not yet begun to fight." And then if you take down the store, you can see the bottom right there. It's got the classic InfoWars logo, my signature, and how many years InfoWars has operated, 1997 to 2026, if they're able to shut us down next year. This is a powerful memento, a piece of history. Let's go to the boom shot and show them how big this poster is. It is, and in person, it is really nice. I'm not usually into posters of myself. It was not my idea. I said, okay, sure, do it. And it is the bestseller. So, and it's limited edition. You can get it signed for $99. You can get it unsigned for $25. And it's a fundraiser to know that you really helped us at this critical juncture. Because if we were able to buy product during the bankruptcy, we would keep operating InfoWars Store and it'd be plenty of money. But they didn't want that. They wanted to strangle it. Well, now we have the state receiver, and he's like, well, in the interim, okay, you can buy some more turmeric, some more fish oil, because that comes in quick. And yeah, okay, you can do these posters, because they're low cost, and they bring in the revenue to keep us going. So hopefully he's a fair guy. Hopefully, I mean, I can't judge him. And so I don't know. But we have to have this to stay on air, or we'll shut down from no funds, and the bad guys win regardless. And you've seen how many times we fought right to the edge and not given up, and God's come through over and over again. When they sent in armed security last May 31st, a year and a half ago, and with no court order, said, get out. And I called the security company, and they said, yeah, this lady from the DOJ says it. And she says, but I'm not going to follow it. And I threatened to call the police if they did try to kick us out. And then when they had the fake auction, the next day they're here and turned the internet off because I said it's a fake auction, I'm not leaving. But we already had the backup network, so I drove over there and got on air only 1 minute late because they shut us down at like 10:30. I mean, this has been cliffhanger, folks. And people have watched this from afar and they've said, is this the Truman Show? This can't be this crazy. Folks, truth is stranger than fiction. This is 100% what we've been going through and the fight we've been in here. And it's been unbelievable. And so thank you for sticking with us. And, you know, thank you for standing with us. And it's been a 12-round Muhammad Ali, George Foreman, you know, absolute knockdown, drag out. And it's just, we're only here because of you. I've got a lot of fight in me and I'll never give up, back down, or sell out. I'm fearless about that. I love what I do. But you are the variable. And that variable is everything. When you decide to spread the word, when you decide to pray for the broadcast, when you decide to financially support us in this fight, the sky's the limit. And that's why I've had to flog and beg and push, because 70%+ of the funds that come in here is to battle all the Democrat law firms that have spent hundreds of millions of dollars in court filings, they admit, Paul Weiss law firm, the top Democrat law firm, all of them, trying to destroy us. And so we spent like $25 million the last 7-8 years fighting them. That's how much money. And it's scaled up, you know, as we go. But you just keep doing that, and we keep holding the line like David versus Goliath because of you. I want to fight so hard. That's why I love you. I thank you for keeping me in the fight. Literally, you're the heart pumping the blood. Without you, we fail. My fellow InfoWarriors, you have until this Sunday, December 14th, 2025 at midnight to get 40% off site-wide. That means all the incredible supplements, methylene red, back in stock, bovine colostrum, ultramethylene blue, the Irish sea moss, the Shilajit, ultimate life force spike protein detox. It's all in stock right now, and it funds the tip of the spear. These are incredible products. Do your Christmas shopping at thealexshowstore.com. Enrich your health, your vitality, your life. They make great gifts, and it gives the gift to all of us of keeping this operation on the air in the face of the globalists. And 40% off is a huge deal with the T-shirts, the ball caps, the hoodies, the sweaters, all the apparel, because there's only about 60% markup in the apparel. So that is one hell of a deal. Please do your Christmas shopping right now at thealexshowstore.com and be the reason we stay on the air. Thank you for being the heart of this operation. Thank you for your support. You have till this Sunday, site-wide, 40% off.
Listening to an InfoWars.com frontline report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, I appreciate Royce White, former NBA player, mixed martial arts fighter. But the most important things he's done is stand up to the tyranny that was going on in the NBA, trying to make them worship communist China and the extermination of the Uyghurs and more. Promoting InfoWars, exposing the Federal Reserve out there in front of the whole world, bucking the system, and then running for national office and, you know, getting pretty far the first time in the Senate race, getting super close despite all the massive fraud in Minnesota that's now being exposed. He has gone up against the communist overlord Democrat Party, Tampon Tim, and then its client state, that particular subgroup of ruling class Somalis, and their cutthroat behavior. So he's battle-hardened, and he's running again. And I'm telling you, you watch it, bloop, bloop, bloop. I remember when he first ran, I said, just don't give up. And he said, I'm not, because it's like, got a lot of votes, but, you know, not close, now super close. Of course, he did obviously won the last election. The fraud's baked in so bad, Minnesota's one of the worst. So he's got to have a landslide to be able to override that like Trump did. And so that's why it's so important. I'm not sure what he's covered tonight. I just wanted to have him do the show. It's anytime he wants to do it. So he's able to do it tonight. Obviously, I think he'll respond to Islam. He's kind of there in Islamic takeover, invasion point, one of the top ones here in the U.S. And so, Royce White, thank you so much for taking over. It's great to see you at Highway. Thank you. At Highway underscore 30. The ball is yours, my friend.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Great Alex Jones, ladies and gentlemen, I'll be here with you for the next couple of hours until 8 p.m. What an honor it is to be able to host InfoWars anytime I get the chance. Here from the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota, like Alex Jones just stated. And I want to start off, I mean, you know, we talk about this a lot on my show, on Real America's Voice, on my podcast, and when I have the chance to host here on InfoWars. You know, survive from outside, you can withstand. But an attack from outside, you can withstand. But an attack from within is much more difficult. And I think that what we see right now in Washington, D.C., and all across the country, and all of the subsequent Republican Party dealings, from Washington, D.C. all the way to here in Minneapolis, is an undermining of the mandate that President Trump was given by the American people and the MAGA movement. Some of it's intended to break the MAGA movement. Some of it was never really on board with the MAGA movement. I just want to give you guys an example of this before we get going tonight. It's people that say, oh, well, Rhino, and what is an establishment Republican and neocon? All these things are kind of buzzwords. They're not buzzwords. I mean, I'm going to try and give you as clear of a definition tonight as I possibly can. So going into a 2026 midterm that is extremely consequential, almost can't really place a number on how consequential the 2026 midterms are. It's just as important as 2024. And that's very hard for the American people to accept, to buy into, to get on board with. Hey, it's an off year. It's a midterm. You typically see a lot of voter turnout drop off in a midterm election or in an off presidential year. We, at least the Republicans, at least people who believe in this country, who want to have a country, at least the conservative movement or the MAGA and America First movement have to show out in mass number. We have to turn out in mass number. There should be a bigger turnout in 2026 than there was in 2024. And if there isn't, it shows that we still don't take serious how important these elections are. Now, before I get going on all of those things, let's start by saying the elections still aren't secure. And that's probably the biggest tell of the entire game, is that the game still appears to be, for lack of a better term, rigged. Certainly here in Minnesota. And your Minnesota Republicans, you know, they talk about election integrity at conventions, at Republican Party meetings, you know, in the media, because it makes for good entertainment as far as they're concerned. They know that they can get the applause and the support from your average American voter or your average Republican voter, more accurately, your average Republican voter, if they say that the elections aren't secure. But when you really get down to brass tack, they don't believe the elections aren't secure, a lot of them. And that's one of the great litmus tests. I think, and you know, Mike Lindell, the great Mike Lindell, who I saw Alex Jones had on the other day, and he announced to run for governor, and already in Minnesota, the establishment is coming out in droves. Oh, Mike Lindell's a bad guy. Oh, Mike Lindell, he's a broken man. His company failed. Oh, Mike Lindell can't win. He's too extreme of a candidate. His rhetoric is this, is that, and blah, 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 blah. Measure your candidates by their enemies. It's one of the few saving graces, I think, for President Trump, despite any mistakes that he makes or flaws that he may have or disagreements you may have with him about the way he's conducting business in this second term. And you could pick bones about some of it, but certainly he's done a lot of incredible things, more than maybe any president in our lifetime, most of which obviously is closing a border. It's without a border, you don't have a country. But Mike Lindell's a similar type of candidate in that he's even different. I mean, yes, Mike Lindell was a drug addict. He was addicted to crack. And for anybody out there who knows how difficult drug addiction is, especially a crack addiction, it's a blessing that Mike Lindell is even still here. It's a blessing that Mike Lindell is still here, let alone, you know, turned his life around, been reborn, you know, born again Christian. And built one of the most successful retail products in the history of Walmart, in the history of this country. I think at one point, Mike Lindell had the highest selling $50 product in the history of Walmart. Incredible, incredible achievement, especially for somebody who came from the bottom. And then he went on to, you know, start all of these drug addiction recovery programs here in the state of Minnesota, which Keith Ellison went after legally. I mean, imagine the kind of scumbag you have to be to shut down drug addiction recovery programs for your political bias. It says everything about who they really are. I say that because Mike Lindell is a similar candidate to President Trump in that he doesn't walk like a politician. He doesn't talk like a politician. He doesn't have the credentials of a typical politician. And those are the exact kind of people that we need. But all of us, even the citizens, we get kind of bogged down in the sort of superficial, I don't even know what to call it. It's, well, you know, can he win? You know, we get caught up in the pageantry of American politics. So can he win? Is he a strong candidate? Well, we have to define what a strong candidate is. If a strong candidate is somebody who can appeal to the milquetoast plumb line status quo that put this country in the position that it's in now, that doesn't seem to be a strong candidate, in my opinion. That's not a good criteria. A good criteria is he going to tell the truth? I was at a Republican convention this past weekend. We had our state central committee, our Minnesota State Central Committee. And, you know, I gave a killer stump speech because I just tell the truth. And it wasn't even a stump speech. I don't do stump speeches. I don't have notes. I don't have any notes here. I don't write anything down. It's got to be something extremely, extremely important for me to write it down or to use notes, because the truth just flows. You don't need notes when you tell the truth. And some of the things that need to be said now in this country are so obvious, it's ridiculous that you have to write them down. We all know what the problem is. We all know what needs to be done. The question is, do we have the balls to do it? Mike Lindell does. Mike Lindell has the balls to stand up and say, these elections are not secure. There's a problem with the machines. It's a real form of American cuckery, conservative cuckery, when the Democrats go out in the public and admit that the machines can be hacked, yet establishment Republicans refuse to say it with a full throat. It's absolutely ridiculous. If your enemies tell you that the machines can be hacked and you refuse to say it, I mean, you know, you don't deserve your freedom. I love our founding fathers. They were so tough and candid in the way that they wrote it, in the way that they spoke. They said, if you give up your freedom for security, you deserve neither and you will have neither. You will have neither and you deserve neither, actually. And I love the deserve part, because even though we have a framework that prioritizes inalienable God-given rights, our founding fathers said, hey, there's a way to forfeit your rights. The way to forfeit your rights is by being a coward. Mike Lindell's not a coward. That's what makes him a good candidate. Somebody asked me, if you make it to the United States Senate, how do you plan to get legislation passed? What relationships do you have there in Washington, D.C.? Are there any other senators that you trust or that you think can help us get this country back on track? And my honest answer was, I can't count a handful of them. The point of me running for United States Senate, the point to get elected to the United States Senate, is everybody, especially in the three branches of government, every legislative body in this country needs a patriot who's going to stand up and tell the truth. Even if he's one of 100, even if he's the only one to tell the truth out of everybody there, every institution in this country, especially the United States Congress, the Congress and the Senate, need at least one person who's willing to stand up and tell the American people the truth. I'll be that guy. They know I'll be that guy. That's why they're fighting me tooth and nail. They can't say anything about my candidacy. They can't question me on the ideas, on the merit of the ideas. None of them want to debate me. None of these conservative thought leaders from the establishment want to debate. None of these Democrats want to debate. Amy Klobuchar, she waited until the week before the election to do a debate on a early Sunday morning radio show that she knew had a very small listenership, and that none of the sound bites from the debate would catch the airwaves before the general election. Not that it would have made a difference anyway, because, again, we don't have secure elections. But we still fight the fights that need fighting. You still fight the fights that are worth fighting. And it's worth it to fight for this country. It's worth it to participate. Don't tell me I'm not going to vote because the machines can be hacked. The machines can be hacked, but you need to be on the count. You need to be counted as a citizen. There's probably nothing more than you being counted. And I understand the catch-22. It's like, well, who's counting? But it's about the process. If you resign from the process, you can't really call yourself an American citizen. You certainly can't call yourself a Christian. We're not Buddhists. We don't resign from the process. We don't resign from life, from society, from chaos. That's the Buddhist way. That's Eastern philosophy. You know, the world is despair and darkness and chaos. So we're going to resign from the world in order to stave off any imperfections, any impurities. That's not the Christian way. The Christian way is to pick up your cross and bear it. As difficult as it may be, as imperfect as you may do it. Nobody's saying you're going to pick up that cross and bear it perfect. Only perfect man was Jesus Christ. But you at least have to decide that you are going to pick up the cross. And from there, let God sort them out. Let God sort you out. Let God judge. But pick up your cross. You have to vote. But you also have to acknowledge and be full-throated in saying, hey, our elections aren't secure. They need to be secure. We got to have secure elections. There's no way around it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. That's the standard. That's the principle. We move people toward the principle. We hold the principle. We move people toward the principle. As slow and as tedious and as grueling and painful as it may be, we move people toward the principle. That's bearing your cross as a Christian and as an American. And I say all of that as a preface to to this statement here. Somebody asked me at the convention, they say, you know, if you run for United States Senate, well, how are you going to pass any legislation? I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that we can pass legislation on day one if I get elected to the United States Senate. That would be political propaganda. That would be political puppetry. That would be me trying to sell you a bill of goods that has no chance whatsoever of coming to fruition. What I can do for you in the United States Senate, what I can do for Minnesotans, but what I can do for all American citizens is tell the truth. And the young woman who I regard as somebody whose heart is in the right place, she looked at me like I had three eyes. She couldn't come to grips with the fact that I was saying there is no way to pass legislation until we vote out every single bought and paid for senator in the United States Senate. When we vote them all out, all 100 of them that are willing to sell out this country, when we do that, then we'll be able to get real America First legislation passed. Then we'll be able to get legislation passed that increases the value of your citizenship and gives you more prosperity and well-being. Then, only then, not before. There's no shortcut. There's no workaround. There's no workaround to having a captured United States Senate with special interests and lobby money up to the gills. There's no workaround. I can't go in there as a single individual and change that. Now, I can appeal to the hearts and minds of the other United States senators, but let's be honest. I mean, if their heart was really in the right place, this country wouldn't be in the position it's in now. It's not by mistake that this country is in the position it's in. It's not happenstance. It's not coincidence. Like Alex Jones said before he brought me on this evening, communism isn't a failed ideology. It's an extremely efficient ideology. It's a successful ideology. The question is, what is it successful at doing? What is its success is the question. It's extremely successful. It's wildly successful. Culturally, it's been immeasurably successful in this country and all around the world. But its success is not your prosperity and well-being. Its success is to break down the fundamental pillars of the West, of our culture. And I want to play this video for you. I hope we got it queued up there in the control room. But this was a video from Michelle Tafoya. I mean, these kind of things blow my mind. Pause the video for me. We're going to play it in a second. I just want to say this. These kind of things blow my mind that these type of Republican commentators, influencers, can be on the record saying these kind of things, and still the American conservative movement finds them to be desirable. I mean, don't get me wrong. RFK and Tulsi Gabbard, they were in a different place before, and there were others who have been in a different place before, and I came out of the political wasteland, let's say. You know, I was a nomad all by myself out there battling the NBA on their globalist policy and worldview. But people change. We're not saying people can't change. People can change. But if in 2024 you were saying that President Trump shouldn't run for reelection because America, and more importantly, the Republican Party, just wanted to get back to normal. You can still be a Republican. You can still be a conservative. You can still be on the team, but you don't get to lead. You don't get to lead us in thought. You certainly don't get to lead us in courage. Play the tape. I want you to hear this. This is from Care 11, that is this pro-establishment, pretty liberal local media here in the state of Minnesota. Let's roll the video here. Let's roll this clip.
President Donald Trump is making a special announcement, and all signs point to the obvious. He's announcing he's going to run for president in 2024. In the last week, however, a growing number of people once on his side are now saying maybe not this time. I spoke to two of those voices, in Michelle Tafoya and Amy Koch. Michelle Tafoya became a household name from the sideline, calling games, until early this year when she got off the sidelines and into politics. She had a brief stint with Republican Kendall Qualls' campaign for Minnesota governor, and then 5 days ago, she wrote an open letter to Donald Trump on her Substack account saying, please don't run for president again.
I think people know that if Trump does throw his hat in the ring, as he's expected to do, that chaos is back. And we've had enough. I mean, people are exhausted.
Why is Tafoya going so far as to say, don't run, Trump?
There are so many things going on that people want some leadership without that kind of baggage, without that kind of tumult. I hear it a lot from people I know who voted for Trump who just don't want to see him back now. They want something a little closer to normal. I think people want sanity. I think people want to breathe normally again. I think people see the writing on the wall.
And this just isn't Tafoya. 3 days ago on Fox, a tweet about calls for Trump to delay his announcement. The Hill published a story saying the party is worried that Trump announcing will backfire. Then the Trump-backed Lieutenant Governor of Virginia came out and said Trump in 2024 is a liability to the Republican mission.
He won in 16. He was new. He was fresh.
Back stateside, longtime Republican Amy Koch had this to say of Trump's seemingly inevitable announcement to run.
I bet you 80% of Republicans think, don't do this.
And her reason? He's a reason they are losing, she thinks.
I think what Republicans have to look deep at is we have basically had four elections with Trump on the ballot. And don't kid yourself, he was a big part of this ballot, and he's one for four.
So agree with the sentiments of these Republicans or not, but the call is out there now, no matter what the former president decides to do.
Look, I don't know what he's going to announce. I don't know what happens, but I do think now that people know his playbook and they know his game plan, they're going to be much more prepared to deal with him. Will he fizzle out? Not quietly, we know that.
Are you understanding? Are you understanding yet, America? Do I have to say anything else? When you look at our great state of Minnesota and you ask questions like, how did it become the epicenter of fraud to the tune of billions of dollars that has to do with these Somalian refugee communities and all of these NGOs or nonprofit scams that we see? When you ask, how did that happen? You're looking at it. That's how it happened. It's the same reason why for the last 30 years, the conservatives have held the Congress and the Senate just as many times as the Democrats. The Republicans have held the Congress and the Senate just as many times as the Democrats, and yet still we lost the country to Satanists and communists. If you can bring up on my X feed, I just posted it probably about a couple hours ago, but there's a plaque of Tom Emmer, House Majority Whip Tom Emmer from right here in the great state of Minnesota. Chair Emeritus of the Somali Caucus. Can we find that picture and bring it up here? It's right there on my Twitter feed, there in the control room. Chair Emeritus teamed up with Marxist sympathizer Keith Ellison back in 2016 to create the Somali Caucus. Oh, how beautiful. And we're going to talk about the Somalian community here on the other side of the break, so stay tuned because there are some misconceptions about the Somalian community. I don't want the Somalian community to become, hyperbole. We're going to talk about the Somalian community on the other side of the break, but it just goes to show you people like Tom Emmer will stand up before the American people and ride the wave of criticizing the Somali fraud because it's popular in the conservative airwaves, but he was integral to the rise of the Somalian immigration and the Somalian integration to government subsidies. You're watching Sunday Night Live here on InfoWars. I'm your host, Royce White. I'm here with you until 8 p.m. We got a whole host of things we're going to get into over the course of the next hour and a half. It's a great honor. Thank you to the great Alex Jones for allowing me to host again. We'll be right back in a moment. Stay tuned.
Pillow alone, just my pillow, not counting me, it cost them over $200 million directly related to Arctic Frost, everybody. What they've done to my company, tried to just wipe them off the face of the earth because I'm out there going, we need to secure our elections. We need to secure our election. We need to get rid of the machines. We need to go to paper ballots.
You were literally terrorized and targeted, and it's in the documents.
And that thing goes so deep. It's funny, Alex, things go so far, and then they tend to get stopped. But you guys, just know, I am never stopping. I will never stop. My number one thing is we need to secure our election platform.
Let's talk about this. People supporting what you're doing and getting the highest quality, you name it, great products. almost all of it made in America. Your great Giza sheets have that special cotton everybody knows comes from Egypt, but you're amazing. Right. I've got some on my king bed. Talk about the incredible products you've got at MyPillow.com/Alex. And again, I want to be clear. We are only here still hanging on, but now people support at thealexjonesstore.com or at mypillow.com/Alex is absolutely critical. This is now literally up to you every month whether we're going to stay in this fight. We're both workaholics. We love people. We love telling the truth. You know, these corrupt people, you know, think we're schmucks because we're not corrupt. No, we know how to be corrupt if we wanted to, dumbasses. But we like being good people. That's what builds a society.
We're the tip of the spear. This is it. We only get one shot at this. And like I said about 2 years ago, they said, Mike, would you, if you could turn back time here and go back, and if you wanted to spoke out about the election, wouldn't stand your ground. You know, look what they've destroyed and tried to destroy you. I said, I would never change a thing knowing what I know and knowing what this is critical. And that's where we're at. And it's because of all of you, because you buy our products. And that's why we're putting right now on sale our five flagship products. We have five flagship products, our biggest products of all time. For you go to mypillow.com/Alex, and you guys are going to see we've got the Giza Dream Sheets. If you put that thing up there, these are all for Christmas presents. You guys, you can get the best Christmas presents ever. The Giza Dream Sheets, the towels, the slippers. On the MyPillow Premiums, we've sold 85 million MyPillows because they work. You save over 50% on those. And then the mattress toppers made in the USA, $149.98, as low as that, depending on the size. But we got in the premium My Towels that actually work. You save 50% there, $39.98. And here's one of my favorites, the My Slippers. Best slippers in history. They're normally $149.98, $39.98. And once they're gone, they're gone. We can't get those back. They're made with impact gel, made out of soybeans. And so you walk on them and it's like walking on a cloud. It's absolutely awesome. This patented gel that's in there. And then you have the Giza Dream Sheets. It's my favorite product. It's our president's favorite product. And not as low as $29.98. And I want to show you one more. You guys go there and you're getting five of these Bible pillows. These are very dear to me. They've got stories on the back. You get basically five Christmas gifts for $29.98 for all five. You got the baby Jesus, Noah's Ark, Daniel in the Lion's Den, but you get all five of them. So you get five individual gifts for under $6 a piece, free shipping, promo code Alex on your entire order. No matter what you are, this is an exclusive free shipping on your entire order. So go to mypillow.com/Alex, and it's a win, win, win. You guys are supporting my employee-owned company. You're getting the best products at the best prices in history. You're supporting this great, Alex's great show. I'll tell you, Alex, I can't be prouder more proud than anyone that support your show and what you put out and help save this country more than anyone. And I mean that.
Welcome back to InfoWars Sunday Night Live. I'm your host, Royce White, here in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. And you have me for the next hour and a half until 8 p.m. I'm grateful, honored to be able to host here on InfoWars as always. It's a great honor. It's a huge honor. And people don't even get to do things like this. I don't know. For me, this is like a dream come true. So I remember being a young teenager, maybe 14, 15 years old. That would have been 2006, 7. And, you know, you had to really know where to dig around on the internet to find the Alex Joneses of the world. Wasn't as mainstream, wasn't as mainline, wasn't as easy to access as it is now. But even then, I said, man, this guy's special. This guy's got a great energy and he's throwing it out there. He's telling it like it is. Certainly not what you're going to get from your ABC network world news. And when if you were honest, if you were even remotely honest, even back then, you looked at things like ABC nightly news and you said to yourself, there's something so inauthentic and scripted about this. It can't be the whole story. Now we know maybe more than ever, USAID and other things that DOGE have uncovered about the way the media industrial complex is cooperated with the highest level of government, subsidization of the Democrat propaganda. Now we know that ABC and the rest of the mainstream media is scripted. It's not, certainly it's funded. I mean, you know, how scripted it is, of course they have a script as well. It's even some of these nighttime comedy shows. It's funny, I was telling somebody, people who watch these shows on television and have never been on the set of one of these shows wouldn't even realize that they have people in the audience, producers who hold up cue cards and tell you when to laugh or when to clap or when to sigh. I mean, that's how scripted daytime television actually is. You watch The View and all of these other shows. They have people in the audience holding up cue cards for the audience. We are living in a Truman Show. We really are. Alex Jones says it's like the Truman Show. We really, it's even the phones. I mean, can we even talk about the phones for a moment? Everybody's got this phone stuck in front of their face, which makes it even more imperative, even more important that you actually immerse yourself in people who are at least trying to discover the truth. They may not find the truth. That's not the prerequisite. That's not the right standard. Oh, you got to find the truth in order for me to listen to you or follow you. No, at least, are they trying to find the truth? In the first question of the first way to sort out, are they trying to find the truth is, what are they talking about? Number one. But number two, what questions do they ask? Are they even questioning the right things? Are they willing to ask tough questions? Because all the easy questions are behind us now. That's a great litmus test. What kind of questions does this person ask? What things are they questioning? As I said, we're going to talk about this Somalian fraud, and I want to start off by saying this. I grew up here in Minnesota, born and raised here in Minnesota, was born in 1991. I'm 35 years old. So I was here when some of the first Somalian refugees came to this country, into Minnesota. In fact, I went to school with a lot of young Somalians in St. Paul, on the east side of St. Paul, up in the Highland Park area of St. Paul and the Battle Creek area of St. Paul. Those of you in Minnesota will be familiar with this, you know, with this geography. But I never had a problem with the Somalians in Minnesota. Never had a problem. Never felt threatened by Somalians. Do they talk a little aggressive? Sure. Sure. You know, if you catch them talking amongst themselves in their native language, they seem to have a different temperament, conversational temperament, than we do as Americans. So there's a culture gap is what they would call that. But I never felt intimidated by Somalians. Now, as I got a little bit older, I did realize that in a place like Minneapolis, there were real legitimate Somalian gangs. One of them was known as the Somalian Outlaws. And they didn't mess around. They're serious. You know, they would stand their ground. They'll go to war with the best of them. And they still exist. But that's not the problem. The problem isn't the Somalians. The problem isn't the Somalian gangs or even Somalian fraud. The problem is that American citizens have accepted the foreign policy that brought Somalians here. And it continues to this very day. And it's a revolving door. It's a door that swings in both directions because the Somalian community doesn't understand how they've been used by the globalists and their foreign policy to undermine the stability of this country, the stability of this great nation. Now, I say that with this preface. I spent 12 days at our Minnesota State Fair. I had a booth. And above my booth, and this was the only political booth at the entire state fair that can say that we were proud of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Above my booth hung a banner that said, Jesus is King. Do you know over 12 days, not one Somalian person came up to my booth and said anything disrespectful about that banner, about Jesus Christ? Take it for what you will. You don't have to listen to me. You don't have to like me, but you do have to deal with reality. If you want to be a citizen in this country, if you want to be a good Christian, you have to deal with reality. The reality is over 12 days at the Minnesota State Fair, 1.1 million patrons, not a single Somalian said anything disrespectful about our Jesus is King banner that hung above our booth. You know who did say disrespectful things about Jesus Christ, about Christianity? Young, white, progressives. And I will say, most of them were female. White, progressive females said disgusting things about Jesus Christ, were extremely disrespectful regarding Jesus Christ or Christianity. And occasionally, you know, one of the boyfriends would chime in and try and back her play, and I'd step out of the booth, all 6'8", 270 pounds of me, and say, what was that, sir? And they would normally back off. There's a great picture right there with me and a black man who dressed up as President Trump. That was a pleasant surprise. Took a picture there. There's the shirt. It says Jesus is King. We gave away about 800 of those T-shirts. You can find some of them on my U.S. Senate website now, RoyceWhite.us, and they got some of those great Jesus King shirts. Jesus King shirts there on sale. But that same graphic there was held above my booth, and not one Somalian said anything disrespectful about our Lord and Savior. And I only point that out to say, whether you think there's any compatibility with Somalians, Islam, and Christianity or not, you can't argue with results. And am I saying that Islam has theological alignment with Christianity? No, I'm not saying that at all. There is some obvious overlap, which is why a lot of the Somalians, if you ask them, hey, what do you think about Isa? They'll say, yeah, prophet, penultimate prophet. We believe in Jesus Christ. Does Jesus Christ supersede Muhammad or the Quran or the Hadith for people who are Muslim? No. And that's a problem for us in the West. It's a problem with our construction of our own theology and faith, but how we want to live in this country. The point I'm making is that in the presence of strong, unabashed, unapologetic Christian leadership, Muslims are very reluctant to disrespect Christ. The problem in this country is not necessarily Islam. It's not the Muslims. It's not the Somalians. It's that Christians are too soft. Christianity has lost its backbone. And we don't have to have a sword or a gun, or we don't have to do violence, but we have to at least be able to stand up and say, hey, we're Christians and we're not ashamed of it. We're not going to let you bully us. We're not going to let you shame us. We're not going to let you tell us that Christian candidates like Mike Lindell aren't strong candidates. We're not interested in your political propaganda about how unelectable Christianity is. That's the point I'm making. I don't fear the Muslims. I don't fear Islam. I fear an apathetic, lazy, post-enlightenment, watered-down Christianity. There are only 8 million Muslims in this country, on by the numbers. I mean, there may be, give or take, you know, we don't exactly know how many are in the country now, and that's a problem, too. That'd be a problem for any demographic of people. When you lose track of how many people of a certain demographic, any demographic, are in the country, you got big problems. Most of which I probably say are Chinese nationals, but hey, I'm a China hawk. That's just me. But, you know, there are only about, I'd say, roughly 8 million Muslims in the country out of 450 million people. Why is everybody so afraid of the Muslims? It's not because they outnumber us. It's because they're serious about their mission and their agenda. And we instinctually know, we intuit that we are not serious about our freedom and our citizenship and most of all our faith. We have that intuition that we're only playing Christian. And again, I'm not saying you're going to be a perfect Christian. I'm not saying that you're going to go without sin. I'm not saying that you're not going to have struggles and obstacles in your spiritual life and in your Christian life. That is not a prerequisite of Christianity, that you make no mistakes, that you never sin. The prerequisite is that you have no fear in your proclamation of Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. If you can do that, you can stand side by side in a Christian phalanx. If you can be unapologetic and unabashed in your Christian faith, you can stand side by side in a Christian phalanx. And this is the propaganda that they play on Christians. They say, well, you're not a very good Christian. Look at Mike Lindell back when you were on drugs. Is that very Christian of you? Look at President Trump. He said, grab him by the lady parts. Is that Christian? Look at Royce White. You had 4 children out of wedlock. Is that Christian? No, all of those things are not the ideal actions of a good Christian. But it doesn't make us any less Christian. And that's the beauty about Christianity. And that's their real animosity towards Christianity. It's an emanating self-guilt from within, a self-guilt and self-hatred that they want to project onto the rest of the world. And they don't want to allow people to repent, because if you can repent, if you can actually repent, if you admit that there's sin and you can repent, then you can move forward. Then you can move forward. Then you can get better. Then you can ascend. That's the beautiful thing about Christianity, actually. In fact, you could argue that's the entire deal, is that you come through a Rubicon of spiritual and personal development by making mistakes and then having the humility to accept, to admit, and to ask for forgiveness. That's the beautiful part about Christianity. There's a microcosm in that for the country. Don't get caught in your ways. Don't get caught in your ways. The only way you get caught in your ways, your bad ways, is if you can't acknowledge first that they're bad, but that there's any way through it. It's like a grand procrastination, right? It's like, well, it is the way it is. Hey, just gonna let it ride. Let it fly. You just got to ride it out. You know, an entire lifetime of duplicitness and wickedness. And for those who God has special favor, he will pull you through. He'll actually put some obstacles in your way to try and pull you through to a better formation, better spiritual life. But again, I say all of that to say the problem isn't the Muslims. The problem is us. And I don't say that in the same way that the radical left, Marxists, and atheists say it. I say it in a way that good Christian leaders should say it. The problem isn't Islam. The problem is that Christians aren't having as many children, and you have to ask yourself why. It's not the right time. You should have your professional life in order. You should have your financial life in order before you have a child, because if not, it becomes a burden on the rest of us. That's why you're afraid of Muslims. It's because the Muslims, they actually use that to their advantage. And along with a government that, for some strange reason, not coincidental, has 2 working theories at the same time. We love women's rights. We love the feminist ideology, but we also love a proto-Sharia law religion, as strange as that is. It works to their benefit. We'll have 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 kids. We'll adopt a kid. We'll bring a kid from over in the homeland that's not even really our kid, just to be able to get the government subsidies. They love children. We kill our children. Let's do a running count of how popular abortion is in the Muslim community. Let's do a running tally of how popular abortion is in the Somalian community. I bet you would be shocked. See, because they value, whether we agree with them or not, Understand, they value their children. They value their lives. They see them as both a political and a strategic advantage. We here in the Christian community, the Christian West, we have a collapsing birth rate. And you have to ask yourself, how did this happen? Well, we know how it happened. Too many Christian feminists. Larry, I said it. You know, write me off. Sign out if you want to. As a Royce White, he's, you know, a woman hater. He's a misogynist. Too many Christian feminists. Both male and female, actually, by the way. I want to point that out. I want to be clear. Too many Christian feminists, both male and female. Too many women out there claiming that they love God, claiming they're Christian, but they just can't help but watch the Kardashians. They just can't help but watch the Beyoncés of the world shake their tail feather at the Super Bowl. They just can't help but condemn that type of behavior, at least in the public domain. I mean, when you're at home, you know, I'm more of a libertarian, whatever floats your boat, fine. You want to get a little wild, you and the lady on the weekend, you had a few extra glasses of wine and things get a little kinky. That's your business. It's not even for me to judge, not even for me to speak on. But when your cultural icons as women only get more popular as they get more fake and take off more of their clothes, we have a cultural issue in this Christian nation. And the cultural issue is not that women want to be liberated. It's not that women want to do whatever they want to do, because all people want to do whatever they want to do. That's not the issue. The issue is that we claim to be a Christian nation, deathly afraid of Muslims and the incompatibility, yet we're afraid to stand up and tell our Christian women, or our women in general, this isn't right. Because we need suburban white women to vote for us to win these elections. And that's who Michelle Tafoya is. To tie it all the way back to the video that I played, that's who Michelle Tafoya is. That's who local Minnesota Republican Amy Koch is. That's who Nikki Haley is. Hell, that's who Ron DeSantis is, respectfully. It's the same kind of philosophy. It's like, hey, the rhetoric's a little too hot. Can we tone down the rhetoric? No, we're not going to tone down anything. What are we toning down the rhetoric for when the problems are as red hot as they've ever been? We have a smoldering nation and we're supposed to tone down the rhetoric? And then they'll say, well, is that very Christ-like? You don't talk like Christ did. Because all of us in Western society, all of us in Western nations, again, that watered down post-enlightenment Christianity have forgotten the part of scripture where Jesus comes through the temple like a whirlwind. Like a whirlwind. I mean, imagine a Tasmanian devil for some of those who can't picture it in their mind. A whirlwind. A physical miracle. He came through the temple like a whirlwind. Turning over tables, calling out the people who were fake, who were using the Godhead as a racket. Who were using the Godhead as a racket, who were trying to monopolize the Godhead. The charlatans in the temple. The charlatans in this temple are our women. Isaiah 3:12, it says, my people oppressed by their children, ruled by their women. Oppressed by their children and ruled by their women. A nation who is oppressed by their children and ruled by their women cannot survive. And this nation still stands, but it stands upon the edge of a blade. And I hope that even if here on Sunday Night Live, InfoWars, this transmission, you can hear the sound of my voice. You're a blue-blooded American and you fancy yourself a trying Christian, as imperfect as you may be. That just us being willing to say it, it makes a difference. It really does. The Somalians aren't our problem. The problem is our foreign policy. The problem is we went to Somalia in the first place for a war we never needed to be involved in. And we let our security state do a quid pro quo deal with people in Somalia, in the Horn of Africa, with which we do not share ideological foundations or basic beliefs and values, many of them. Many of those people who brokered those deals, we do not share their beliefs about the world. At least we don't here in America. Some of the deep state and security state intelligence community assets and programs that brokered those deals, they certainly may believe in some of those same ideals. It would appear so. But we don't believe in those things. And yet we did a quid pro quo deal that brought all these Somalian refugees here the same way we do from every war-torn nation, wars that we had no business in the first place. And the American people, we just accept it. We're such a gracious people, such a gracious nation. Sure, come on over. The land of milk and honey, America's great. Yeah, you can build a great life here, the American dream. And for some of them, we want them to, for sure. Get in line. Come legally. I said it the other day. If you're here in this country illegally, you're going back. It's not difficult. We can call those balls and strikes pretty easy. The same way as a black man, I can't just waltz across, no pun intended, to our communist governor, Tim Walz. But I can't just waltz across the border there in China and live free and even be paid to live there. It's ridiculous. It's obscene. It's absurd. They would shoot me as a black man if I tried to waltz tampon Tim Walz across the border in China and live there and have the audacity to demand payment. They would take me out back and they would shoot me in the head. Seriously, that's how it would go down in China. That's how it might go down in Israel, by the way. And a bunch of other countries that have pretty stable borders, juxtaposed to our great nation, the United States of America. So if you're here illegally, you're going back. If you're here legally, just so happens we're going to be checking that process. We're going to be seeing if these legal immigrations were really so legal. And that's not on President Trump. That's on Joe Biden and the rest of the illegitimate regime that tried to use mass migration, illegal immigration as a way to tear this country to pieces. It's on them. When you see the ICE raids, it's not President Trump's fault to have to clean this mess up. It's the people who created the mess in the first place. You're watching InfoWars Sunday Night Live. I'm your host, Royce White. Stay tuned. We'll be right back on the other side of the break. We got an entire hour left. We're just getting started. We're going to talk about this globalist policy in a moment. Stay tuned.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said, this was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf. And I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
It is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take it as it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here. A year after the Onion said they bought us, We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it and support us, we'll be off the air. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason, one way or another, we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Welcome back to InfoWars Sunday Night Live. I'm your host, Royce White, here in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hope you've been enjoying the first hour of my guest hosting here. Hey, you know, I just tell it like it is, guys, and that's exactly what I plan to do from the well of the United States Senate. It's all we can do is tell the truth at this point. Last hour, I talked about this Somalian, you know, fraud. Look, there are a lot of good Somalians here in Minnesota. Let's just call a spade a spade, okay? There are a few. We know what that number of few is. Could be a big number. And if it's a big number, then it's a mass deportation. If there are 30,000 Somalian immigrants that defrauded the immigration process, you're going back. Sorry. I don't know what they're waiting on. You know what bothers me the most? What are they waiting on when it comes to Ilhan Omar? What are they waiting on? She defrauded the immigration process. What is this Department of Justice waiting on? Did we get the picture up? Did bring the picture up for my ex, if you can, of the plaque with Tom Emmer and the Somalian caucus. Can we bring that up on the side by side, please? There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen of the American Conservative Movement and Republican Party, your House Majority Whip, most powerful Republican in Minnesota, titular head of the Minnesota Republican establishment, Chairman Emeritus of the Somali Caucus. Oh, he and Keith Ellison, they had a great PR moment, a great photo op for creating the Somali caucus. Why is there a Somali caucus in the first place? If Somalians who came to this country are here legally and they believe in America and they want to be Americans, they want to pursue the American dream, they believe in America's foundational values, why do they need a caucus? And hey, I don't mind that they have a caucus. What I do mind is that people like Tom Emmer play both sides of the fence. They go on the Fox News of the world and say, we have a problem with Islam. But they come back home to Minnesota and they're the chair emeritus of the Somali caucus. And they just do it right up in your face. They're like, you Americans are stupid. We could tell you anything. You'll believe anything. That's probably the biggest, the greatest discovery in my time involved with politics over the last 4 or 5 years is how stupid they think you are, and how willing many people are to accept the propaganda, to drink the Kool-Aid. So that's why I say on my show, convenience will be the death of freedom. Convenience will be the death of freedom. It's not just the convenience of security, it's the convenience of uncomfortability. You don't want to be uncomfortable when a person like me tells you that for some strange reason, our House Majority Whip is the chairman emeritus of the Somali caucus, and what everybody claims is one of the greatest problems and examples of the fall of Western society and all of our great United States of America. But for some reason, we still pretend like Tom Emmer is a great MAGA Republican, don't we? We just can't break it. Cowardice. I'll say it. Tom Emmer, as a matter of fact, I think I confronted Tom Emmer at a Congressional District 6 convention and asked him why he didn't endorse me after I had won the nomination in a primary as the Republican candidate against one of the most progressive Democrats in all of America. Amy Klobuchar, why didn't our House Majority Whip endorse me in that race? What he's really saying is, we'd rather have Amy Klobuchar than a Royce White. And that about says it all, doesn't it? That starts to connect the dots, doesn't it? At least it should. I mean, hey, if it doesn't for you, then you probably just don't want to see it. But then again, you're probably not listening to Alex Jones on a Sunday night. I'm Royce White. I'm here in the belly of the beast. Stay tuned. We'll be right back in a moment after this brief break.
You have until this Sunday, December 14th, 2025, to get 40% off store-wide at theolivechannelstore.com. And that means all of the incredible supplements that will enrich and empower your life. They really work. We have five-star reviews, and they fund our operation, taking on the globalists. So please do your Christmas shopping at theolivechannelstore.com. It is a 360 win for everybody. Now, ultramethylene blue liquid, 40% off. Bovine colostrum, the very best, running out, still 40% off. Ultramethylene blue caps, 40% off. Back in stock. Ultramethylene red, that's right, it's back in stock, but it has a very low supply. Ultimate sea moss gummies and capsules, all back in stock, 40% off at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, please do your Christmas shopping at thealexjonesstore.com. Get great products that enrich your life and funds the tip of the spear in the fight against the globalists.
Welcome back to InfoWars Sunday Night Live. I'm your host, Royce White, here in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. We're just talking about the Rhino establishment. Oh, we know what the globalists are up to. We know how the Somalians came to Minnesota in the first place. We were sticking our nose in a war, in a conflict we had no business in to begin with. Ilhan Omar's father was a nationalist, socialist warlord, general there in the Horn of Africa, who was responsible for the deaths of some hundreds of thousands of Somalis and Somalilanders there in the Horn of Africa. That's the part they leave out of Ilhan Omar's bio about her background, about her family's background. Can you imagine if Royce White's, if my father was a nationalist, socialist, warlord, general who was responsible for the genocide of hundreds of thousands of any people anywhere in the world? Can you imagine what the hit pieces would say from the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Guardian? They say this man comes from a family of genocidal maniacs. They're killers. But oh, Ilhan Omar, she fits the DEI prototype. She's perfect. She's a woman. She's Muslim. She's an immigrant, a refugee. She married a white Jewish man despite her hatred of white men and white supremacy. She is the quintessential Democrat. So we'll just leave the part about her genocidal father out of her profile. No need to bring it up. Ask those Somalilanders about General Omar. That was his name. Not even sure. You know, they changed their names and things. But the problem isn't the problem isn't the Somalians. The problem is we accepted a foreign policy that would have us in a war we shouldn't be in the first place. And then we accepted the result, the outcome of hundreds of thousands of Somalians being dropped right here in the state of Minnesota, in our neighborhoods, in our homes. That's what we accepted. That's the problem. And I was at this town hall this last week here, and a man who I know, who I took a picture with in St. Cloud at the Trump rally. As if you remember the Trump rally here in Minnesota, it was big time, sold out, line around the block, you know, a mile long line of people who were just in the overflow crowd, because we have a big, despite what they want you to believe, that Michelle Tafoya's, a lot of people here in the state of Minnesota love President Trump. And they love the MAGA movement, and they love what it's done. They don't regard it as chaos or anything of the sort. We regard it as a return to normal. Just right. We're not the far right. We're not the extreme right. We're just right. President Trump is a return to some resemblance of normalcy, to where we had gone. So there was this great President Trump rally in St. Cloud, and a lot of several dozens of Somalians came out in support of President Trump. People from the Somalian community, leaders from the Somalian community, who are conservatives, who are Republicans, who believe in this country, who believe in having a country called America and our foundational values and a citizenship, a citizenry that will not submit to Sharia law. There are Somalians and Muslims in this country who do believe in America. And they are in a constant battle, a constant conflict, ideologically, spiritually, intellectually, to square some of the more extreme elements of their faith practice and their citizenship. But anyway, at this rally, I took a picture with a young man, an individual who was supportive of President Trump and, you know, stomped for President Trump and tried to rally support in the Somalian community for President Trump. And he shows up at this town hall and he's very upset with me for saying that we should mass deport Somalians. That's, first of all, I didn't say we're going to mass deport all Somalians. I said we're going to mass deport the illegal Somalians. And we are. By God, we will. Or we better. But what I ended up telling him during that town hall is, and I think he got the message clear, because by the end, we shook hands and we hugged, and I think that we have an understanding. The answers to Somalia are not in Minneapolis. The answers to Somalia are in Somalia. The answers to Somalia are not in Minneapolis. The answers to Somalia are in Somalia. The reason why Somalia is a failed state, the reason why Somalia barely has any resemblance of a stable government, is not because of America. I should say it's not because of American citizens. It's not because of your average American citizen. It's because we allowed globalist political elites, financial elites, international elites, to stick their nose in a conflict we had no business in, and they like Somalia poor. See, when I mentioned Muammar Gaddafi in this town hall, the Republicans lost the color in their face, but the Somalian man who came with criticism and was upset about my comments changed his energy. So I had to remind him that Muammar Gaddafi stood up before the Arab Union, before the entire United Nations, but as the chair of the Arab Union, and said Somalia's problems, the piracy of Somalia, is the reason why there's piracy is because all of these other nations have come in and they've exploited Somalia's natural resources. And that's true. I think there's something like $4 trillion of oil reserves in Somalia. Untapped oil reserves in Somalia, not to mention the gold, not to mention the fish and all the other things off the coast and the oceans of Somalia. And the people of Somalia, here's the double-edged knife. Yes, our security state and our globalist politicians and our foreign policy did lead to the exploitation of Somalia. But it wouldn't have been possible without those Somalian sellouts. It's the same as the black community. Yes, you look across America and the black community is in peril. It's in ruin. But it couldn't have happened without the quid pro quo from the professional black population that takes a degree and they move to the suburbs and they get to high society. And they go to the wine, you know, mixers and all the little cool parties, and they're in the bourgeois class, and they get to act like they're oh so cool. And they end up joining a government corporate hybrid that loves black communities in chaos, in violence, in self-destruction. And they call it DEI. You get enough black people that make it out of the circumstance of the hood where there's chaos and violence and self-destruction. And they get to the corporate world And in some strange twist of events, they end up at the head of, YouTube Music or BET or Jive and Interscope, whatever the case may be. And all of a sudden, you find the same black bourgeoisie sellouts justifying why it's appropriate for our cultural icons as black women to get popular and successful the more provocative they are and the more they take their clothes off. And in some very perverse ways, the more they depict images and symbols of Satan. It's like I still see women in the black community posting pictures and videos of Beyonce, even though they say they're Christians, as though they didn't see all of the satanic symbolism from Beyonce over the last decade. Are you getting my picture? Are you picking up what I'm putting down? Our country is plagued by a crisis of fake. We don't like the truth. We don't like to tell the truth. We don't like inconvenience. We don't like how uncomfortable it gets in the room when we say, hey, black women, I don't care what the Kardashians are doing, but it's probably not a good idea to connect your personal identity and vitality as a woman or a citizen or a political entity, because all citizens are in some regards, with your sexual liberation. Those probably aren't two things you want to conflate. If the only measure of me being more liberated, me having more freedom, me having more value in my citizenship or as a human being, or certainly as a Christian, is that I'm getting popular by my provocative behavior and taking more of my clothes off and shaking my backside. That's no real identity to have. That's no identity to be proud of. That's why, and I say that a lot of black people are starting to understand that. That's why a lot of black people rejected when Kamala Harris brought Meg the Stallion. I'm a savage, ratchet, bougie. I don't know what the rest of the lyrics are. But you all know the song. You don't know the song. Meg the Stallion. You know, I'm a savage, ratchet, bougie. None of those things are good. It's not good to, you know, then when Fox News, and this is the controlled opposition, then Fox News says, this is savage behavior. And then black people go, oh, that's racist. You called yourself a savage. Let's be real. You called yourself a savage, Meg Thee Stallion, and then Kamala Harris brought you up on stage to launch her presidential campaign. This is what we should want young black girls to look up to. Not my young black girls. If their mamas are in charge, if their mothers are in charge, maybe that'll be their modus operandi. And like I said the last time I was on the show, oppressed by our children, ruled by our women. The American man has been neutered. American fathers have been neutered in the home. Let's not talk about whether American fathers or black fathers are in the home or out of the home. American fathers are neutered in the home. American fathers, American men are neutered in their marriages, systematically propped up by the marriage courts and the family courts, because most men are reluctant to assert their male authority, their rightful male authority, even if you say just on an equal basis in a marriage between in a 50-50 sort of split, which isn't a Christian idea, but and it's not a biological idea of the animal kingdom either. But let's just say in American culture, a 50-50 partnership, there's no 50-50. There's nothing 50-50 about modern American marriages where 80% of the divorces are initiated by women. Where 70% of women say that they're unhappy in their current marriages? There's nothing 50-50 about this marriage dynamic in this country at all. And there's certainly nothing 50-50 about the split, the divorces. In the divorces, over 60 to 70% of the time, the children go with the woman. The children are given to the women primarily in terms of custody or living arrangements, where fathers are usually accused of some type of wrongdoing or abusive behavior towards the children as a ploy to gain favor in a female or woman leaning court so that they can get custody, so they can claim that I need more child support because the kid lives with me more time than the father. Only in these strange marriages like Britney Spears and Kevin Federline, where he was a dancer and then ended up being a house dad in the marriage, big pimp in Kevin Federline. And then Britney loses her mind, goes crazy, and they get divorced, and Britney Spears ends up paying Kevin Federline money. That only happens. Oh, you know what's funny? That only happens when women actually reach the success that we try and put in front of our young women. Hey, young women out there, when you reach the Beyonce level success and you have a man, a regular guy who's not rich and famous, you end up paying him alimony when you get divorced. Isn't it funny how that whole thing works? And some people might be listening and going, what does this have to do with politics? Everything. That's the point. It's a crisis of culture. Everybody's getting their phone. You know, it's like everybody's doing a selfie. It's like, first of all, you're not that cool. You're not that good looking. Number one, you're not that good looking. Okay, let's just be clear about that. And I don't say that as an insult. I say that to be completely, 100% honest with you, because you look weird. The amount of I saw this the other day. There was a meme that said that this generation of Americans has most documented no achievements of any other time in history. We're just documenting our lack of achievement. We're just cool for being cool. The achievement is the documentation itself. It's like, it's what I mean about the pageantry. Even then it becomes, it bleeds over into our politics. It's like, who can tell the best story? That's who's the best candidate. Is he a strong candidate? What's his website look like? What's the color theme of his pamphlets? He's got some great pamphlets. He's got great handouts. Look at his literature. He's got great literature. It's eye-popping literature. Look, it's got purple in it. Because, purple's such a neutral color. We want to appeal to the independents and the moderates. I love that strong purple color in Minnesota. Ooh, the Vikings. And I don't mind the purple. I'm not saying the purple's bad. I get it. But what I'm saying is American politics is about the pageantry. Because American culture is about the pageantry. And even Christianity is about the pageantry. Let's get down to it. The problem with American Christianity, the problem why you're afraid of the Muslims, is because the Muslims pray way different than we do. When the Muslims pray, all Christians get uncomfortable because you realize there's an intensity and discipline and a sort of a military organization to the way that Muslims pray. That's why you're afraid of Muslims when they pray in mass, like in New York City. That's why Christians don't go out to counter pray when they see the Muslims praying. Because there's a seriousness to the way that Muslims pray. The way that we pray in the Christian community, and mostly in the Protestant and in evangelical Christian community, is we come and we have some great alternative pop band, with the guitars and the bass and the beautiful inspirational music. And we hold our hands up, and this is the epitome of American Christianity. This is it. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. Oh God. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Jesus. Well, you see the results. Well, the problem in our Christian community is there aren't enough Christian leaders willing to stand up and say, and I'm seeing a few of them now. Mind you, I do want to be clear. I am seeing a more militant Christian movement starting to emerge in some of these places of worship where they're like, There's a young, there's a younger black man. He's bald head, dark skin, bald head, has a beard, and, he's got these great inspirational clips on social media. I keep coming by. Maybe it's because my algorithm is taking a liking to him because he's tough. He goes, if Christians aren't careful, you're going to wake up and the Bible's going to be illegal. The Bible's going to be illegal. If we keep coming to church to sing a stupid song and then go back and watch football and act like everything's okay, you're going to wake up and the Bible's going to be illegal. So there is a rise of some Christian militancy, but we need to put it in overdrive if we're going to save this country. That's the cold, hard truth. The reason you're afraid when Muslims pray is because we even our prayer culture is very pageant-like. That's the best I can tell you. That really is the best I can tell you. It's like, we're soft. I'm not a perfect Christian. I'm not gonna Bible thump you. I've talked about Christianity a lot over these 2 hours, but I'm not here to say if you're not perfect, if you're a sinner, then you have no right to talk about anything in this country. No. Oh no. No. That is not a Christian idea. Christians know that we're flawed. We know that we make mistakes. We know that sin is inevitable. It's been inevitable since the days of the garden. Man is fallen. How we deal with those mistakes, how we deal with those flaws is what makes us who we are. It's often the way by which we find our salvation. So you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be perfect to be a Christian or to stand up as one. Don't let them gaslight you into believing you have to be a perfect Christian to stand up as a Christian. It's ridiculous. And I know that some of you allow them to gaslight you into saying that, and you accept that narrative because you're trying to find a way out of the tough thing that needs to be done as well. You want a way out. You want a scapegoat. You want an off-ramp to the duty of Christians in this time where our country's been taken by Satanists and communists. You want a way out. Well, guess what? There are no ways out. Nobody's getting out alive. Nobody gets out alive. There is no workaround now. All the easy answers are behind us. All the easy questions are behind us. What do we do going forward? We're going to talk about that on the other side of the break. I hate to have to do this, you know? I wish we could just come on and talk about things that are lighthearted and pleasant, but we can't because of the situation we're in. And I think this administration is burning daylight. I really do. Where are the arrests? Well, where are the indictments? Where are the arrests? Where are the indictments? How is Ilhan Omar still in the Congress? It's ridiculous. She frauded the process. She married her brother. They're not even hiding it. Nobody's even denying it. The people in the Somali community here in Minnesota, they're not denying it. They're not saying that's not true. They're more or less winking nod saying, yeah, I probably did. Where's the evidence? Why don't we have good enough records to even know if it's true or not right away upon demand? Think that's by accident? That Somalian refugees and their immigration status have bad record keeping? You think that's by accident? It's not by accident. There are no coincidences. There are no conspiracies, but there are no coincidences. It's not a coincidence. You're watching Sunday Night Live here on InfoWars. I'm your host, Royce White. Another 30 minutes until 8 p.m. Hope you're enjoying the broadcast this evening. It's a great honor to host. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I have not yet begun to fight. That's what the founder of the U.S. Navy, John Paul Jones, said back in 1779. And that's exactly where we are right now. You see this bad boy right here? That is a limited edition original InfoWars poster. We got about 1,000 that are unsigned, 500 that are signed, and that's it. And it is the final Hail Mary to keep InfoWars on the air. We've sold out of almost every product at InfoWarsStore.com. We had the bankruptcy, they won't let us order new products, but we were able to get this produced. This is an emergency fundraiser. It's myself, actual screenshot from the show, with a 357 Magnum aimed at the globalist, the truth gun, with John Paul Jones, the founder of the U.S. Navy, saying, "I have not yet begun to fight." And 1997 to 2026, how long InfoWars survived. Hopefully we go past that with my signature. This is a limited edition poster, signed or unsigned. It goes to keep us on the air. They're going to have an auction. They're saying in January. They already had a federal auction that was rigged and fake, and the judge shut it down. This is a state auction. Good guys are going to try to buy InfoWars. We'll stay on air as InfoWars if they're successful. If they're not, we move on to the Alex Jones Network. But regardless, if we don't have funds coming in December and January, there won't be money for payroll. There won't be money for the bandwidth or the servers or the satellites. So it's absolutely essential you get this. And if we get shut down, you have a memento of the final resistance at InfoWars that is so historic to hang on your wall. And there's not just this poster. We've made 1,000 of these two other posters that I designed as well. One says, "Defend the West, 1997-2026, InfoWars," with the archetypal Knight of the West standing against the globalist. There's another, "Make no peace with evil," with another Knight of the Crusades standing with the cross in his hand against the globalist tyranny. Both are powerful posters as well. These are limited edition. You can get signed copies if you really want to support us, or just get the regular posters as well if you want to support us. But all three of these posters are limited edition, right now exclusively available at InfoWarsStore.com. This is historic. We've come so far together. The deep state spent hundreds of millions of dollars trying to shut us down. We still got a chance to win. But if we don't have the funds coming in December and January, we will shut down. So I want to thank you all for your past support. I want to encourage you now to go to InfoWarsStore.com, where everything else is sold out and there's no more funds to buy more stuff to keep us on the air. And just by attrition, they will win and shut us down by not having money for payroll if you don't decide to bail out this organization that has had incredible results against the tyrants and has stood for you and your family and all of us collectively. So take action now and get the iconic limited edition "I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight," John Paul Jones, Alex Jones poster, and "Make No Peace with Evil" and "Defend the West" posters, limited edition, and know historically you stood with the tip of the spear at the key part of this fight, and we never gave up, and we never surrendered, and we stood and fought on our feet instead of groveling on our knees as slaves. Thank you so much. I've fired the bat signal. Thank you for all your past support, but now is the critical time to take action at InfoWarsStore.com for these three limited edition iconic posters. The ball's in your court. Take action now at InfoWarsStore.com. It's now up to you.
Welcome back to the Royce White Show. No, it's not the Royce White Show. This is Sunday Night Live on InfoWars here. I'm your host, Royce White, in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Talked about a lot of things over the course of 2 hours. I've enjoyed hosting today. I hope that you enjoyed it as well. We got to get down to brass tack. what do we do going forward? Tell the truth. It's not hard. It's not difficult. It's not rocket science. It's not rocket science. Not, you know, theoretical physics, particle string theory, quantum physics. It's not even political science. It's just basic. Tell the truth. We have to tell the truth about what's going on in this country culturally, politically, spiritually. And if we do that, we stand a fighting chance. The truth always has a chance. I'm not saying we'll be victorious, because Jesus Christ spoke the truth. He was crucified for it. The early apostles, they were martyred. And the fundamental difference between Christianity and Islam is that Christianity was spread by the blood of the martyrs, and Islam was spread by the blood of its enemies. So I'm not saying you're guaranteed victory if you tell the truth, but I think the inception of this country, 1776, the inception of the United States of America, was an inflection point in the spiritual arc of human history, where our founding fathers framed this country in a way where the blood of the martyrs, where picking up your cross and bearing it, where self-sacrifice and basic truth, telling the truth, especially about the most important issues of our time, does have a fighting chance of concretizing what they would call the will of the people. Vox populi, vox Dei. The voice of the people is the voice of God. Our founding fathers framed our government in a way that connects, that bridges a gap, at least intellectually, but also politically, governmentally, bridges a gap between righteousness, God, Christ, righteousness, and the overall will of the people by some measurable standard. So it's never been more important that we tell the truth. Never been more necessary. We're afraid of Islam because Christianity is too soft. We outnumber the Muslims in this country, 30 to 1. It's about 8 million Muslims in America at best. But they're organized. Not even as organized as some would say. I mean, I think the best measure of overall Muslim organization is when you look at the Arab states there in the Middle East and how quickly they bend the knee when the bullets start flying, even recently during the conflict there in the region. You know, the Muslims, as faithful as they may be to the Quran and Muhammad, face the same conflict, internal conflict, as the rest of humanity. How does one live in modernity and still prioritize the contemplative, still prioritize the spiritual? Now, that is a conundrum that all of us face in society going forward, especially as the technology increases, especially as the industrialization of our global society increases. How does one live in modern society and still keep the spiritual a priority? Very difficult, not easy. The Muslims have to deal with it the same way that we do. And that's why when push comes to shove, people can say, oh, East versus West, cross versus crescent, like President Erdogan of Turkey after October 7th. So this is a fight between the East and West, the cross versus crescent. But really, Erdogan, is that what it is? Is this a holy war, sir? The heart of the Turk longs for Vienna. Ever heard that expression? It's an expression about the Turkish desire to be European. The heart of the Turk longs for Vienna, which is probably why the Uyghurs were thrown into Turkic Muslims, probably why the Uyghurs were thrown into concentration camps by China in China by the CCP. And you didn't hear President Erdogan saying that it was a war between the Muslims and the Chinese elites. Did you ever hear him say that? No, you didn't. Did you ever hear President Erdogan make one public statement condemning the treatment of the some 2 million Uyghurs put in concentration camps in China? No, you didn't. Because they have sellouts in the Muslim world and the Arab states the same way they have sellouts right here in these United States. Selling out is the problem. We have a crisis of leadership and an epidemic of sellouts. That's the real pandemic. The pandemic of people selling out is far worse than COVID-19 by a long shot. It's not even close, not even remotely close. The real epidemic in this country is selling out. It's so bad, in fact, people aren't even getting offered to sell out. They're preparing their resume on the off chance they get an offer to sell out. They don't even have an offer. They're living their lives as sellouts on the off chance somebody comes along and offers them a handsome payday for giving up their morals and their integrity. They're keeping their resume ready. I'll sell out. I'll sell out for the right price. Hey, I'll sell out for the right price. Just give me the right amount. I'll sell out. Go ahead, bend me over. I'll sell out. Sell out here. Going once, going twice. Anybody need a sellout? That's the epidemic of this great nation. People who are willing to sell out, too willing to sell out. Well, you're looking at a man before you now that will not sell out. In fact, the great tumult of my young 35-year-old life is all a byproduct of me not selling out. Child support arrears and the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Why? Because I was court ordered to pay child support at an NBA salary that I never actually made, which I never actually made because I was willing to challenge the NBA at 21, not 41, not 31. At 21 years old, I was willing to go into an office with a bunch of international lawyers and businessmen that run the NBA, run the National Basketball Association, and say, do you all think I'm for sale? Because if you think I'm for sale, I'm offended. If you think I'm for sale, keep your money. Some of my friends, some of my colleagues, some of my counterparts, some of the people I grew up with, they took the money and they will continue to take the money. And I'm not shaming them for taking the money. I'm just different. I'm a little different. If there's something to be said, I'm going to say it. That's my calling. That's my personality temperament. Against all odds, it could be me in a room of 100 people, and there's an elephant sitting there, big, huge elephant. I'm going to be the one to point the elephant out. And if it means all 100 people descend against me with all their might, I will fight my way out of that room if necessary. And those are the kind of people that you need leading this country. Who's willing to stand in the fire with the scrutiny as the purveyors of the status quo attempt to maintain the status quo of corruption? Who will stand in that fire? Who will fight in that fire? It's not enough to even just stand in the fire. You know, somebody could stand in the fire and die a glorious death of a martyr, burnt at the stake like the great Joan of Arc. So it's possible to stand in the fire. Who can fight in the fire? President Trump is a guy who fights in the fire. Literally, he's in the fire and he's still fighting. In fact, he got shot. He stood up and he said, fight, fight, fight. I mean, still one of the most, if we can pull that up, I think we have such a short-term, memory crisis in America, in American culture, that we forget those glorious moments. If we can, let's just roll some B-roll of that moment where President Trump was shot and in a glorious response, he stands and instinctually says, fight, fight, fight. Let's just remember who this man actually is. You see, you know who a man really is in a life or death situation. You can tell who a man really is in a life or death situation, all flaws and all, imperfections and all. Do I have a bunch of criticisms of this administration? I have plenty of disagreements with President Trump on a wide variety of issues, but you can tell who a man really is when you put him in a life or death situation. How does he respond? Does he respond with courage or does he cower? This is one of the most courageous things that we witnessed in the history of our great nation. We all knew it was coming. We all knew the assassination attempt of President Trump was coming, and there may be more in the future. Don't count that out. I think now they kind of feel that they've institutionally slowed President Trump down, which I said that they would do after he won. That the real fight begins now, not to try and kill him. That the real fight is that they're going to try and use the institutions to railroad his second term. And I think they've done that. I think they've successfully done that. And it's going to be on President Trump, in his courage and his righteousness and discernment, to bring down the heavy sword of righteousness to overcome the institutional roadblocks that have been put before him in this administration. Some of them right there inside the administration. And I know that's uncomfortable. I'm sure there's so much backstabbing and backbiting and double dealing and triple crossing right there in the White House that it would blow our minds. This is the stuff that they make daytime television shows like Scandal based on. We can't even start to imagine the beginning of the double crosses and triple crosses that are going on there in Washington, D.C. And we pray that President Trump can find his way through that, can steer the ship through that. But never forget who a man is when he's in a life or death situation and how he responds, how he handles that. Does he handle it with courage or does he cower? We don't have any more room for cowards. There are too many cowards in the Republican Party. There are too many cowards in the conservative movement. There are too many cowards in our Christian community. There are too many cowards here in America. You're a citizen. Stand up. Stand up. Be a warrior. You are a warrior. You are a fighter. Glory is not on Instagram or X or Getter or True Social or Facebook. Glory for American citizens is being a citizen, being an active citizen, fighting for this nation. Organize your community. Organize your family as best as you can. I know there's a lot of family strife in politics. Organize your local area. Go to precinctstrategy.com. Find out how to become a precinct committeeman. Get involved in the party process so you don't get rhino Minnesota Republicans like Kendall Qualls or Michelle Tafoya. And they are. They're establishment Republicans. President Trump's a little too chaotic. I know a lot of Republicans who voted for him, but they want to get back to normal now. Do you want to get back to normal? What was the normal exactly? The normal of the Minnesota Republican Party, and this is probably one of the great dark marks on the Republican Party as a whole, nationally, is that we put up Mitt Romney instead of Ron Paul. I mean, we kind of just said the quiet part out loud in that nomination, didn't we, as Republicans? We like a guy with a great smile, a great head of hair, and a great elitist name before the guy who's telling the truth. There is no way on earth that Mitt Romney should have been the candidate to go against the most progressive person in American politics instead of Ron Paul. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. We still haven't recovered as a party. In fact, we haven't recovered from that. It's because even though Mitt Romney's lost favor and the MAGA movement's become so strong that the Mitt Romneys of the world had to resign, had to drop out and say, you know what, my time has come. I can no longer. And then they throw in with Kamala Harris. I mean, think of it. Just think of it. It's indicative of what I've been saying all night. The problem isn't Kamala Harris. The problem is a former Republican presidential nominee on the Republican side threw in with the communists in this nation's darkest hour. Mitt Romney, 2012 Republican nominee, threw in with Kamala Harris and commie Tim Walz in this nation's darkest hour. That is the story of the Republican Party. President Trump changed that story. The MAGA movement and America First movement are trying to change that story. Here in Minnesota, Mike Lindell and I are trying to change that story. But we're going to need people's help. Well, you can't resign. You can't resign from a society. You can't resign from life. You can die in a blaze of glory, but you can't resign. You can die in a blaze of glory, but you cannot resign. You cannot retreat. You can reorganize. Okay. But there is no retreat. There is no back step. Especially not in politics. We're not going to tone down the rhetoric. We're not going to tone down anything. There's no easy way to clean up a big mess. There's no easy way to clean up a huge mess. The open border that the illegitimate Biden regime left for President Trump and the rest of us as American citizens was a huge mess. And there's no easy way to clean up a huge mess. That's what I told the Somalians that came out to the town hall. I said, don't blame President Trump when ICE gets a little bit aggressive or you know, and even in my opinion, is mishandling of people out there while they're trying to sort out who's who. It's not President Trump's fault. And the answer is, well, we're just going to let everybody stay because there's no easy way to clean it up. There's no way to clean it up that doesn't look bad. We're tired of the PR and the propaganda and the pleasantry. We, the American people, if you want to place the blame, you place the blame on your leaders who were responsible for opening up a border, our border. And then if you want to place the blame, you place the blame on yourself for electing those people and allowing them to operate that way. It's their fault. And then it's our fault. It's not the person's fault who has to clean it up. I mean, it's like, you know, blaming ICE for the imperfect way that they have to go about getting rid of all these illegal immigrants is like showing up to the scene of a crime and somebody's shot somebody else. And now there's blood gushing profusely from the individual. And you blame the paramedic for getting blood all over their paramedic uniform. How are you going to blame them? It's ridiculous. But again, that's a crisis and failure of first principles and logic. And that's by design. That's not a coincidence that we fail to use our first principles and logic on something as easy as that. It's not ICE's fault that they have to get aggressive out there trying to deport people who aren't supposed to be here. And when they get it wrong and when they misidentify somebody or they take somebody or they're rough with somebody who actually ends up being a legal citizen, they should apologize and there should be restitution. That's fair. That's fair. It's fair for the government to say, you know what? We have a mandate to get out all these illegal immigrants. But when we make a mistake, when we get it wrong, we will apologize and we will pay restitution for our mistakes. That's okay. That's a good use of our money. Not sending another couple billion dollars to Ukraine. That's the point fundamentally, at a spiritual level. You talk about brass tack. How do we go forward? That has to be the change in how we see this thing, how we view it, how we deal with this thing going forward. We can't afford to send another dime to another country because we have to get illegal immigrants out of this country. And when we get it wrong, and we will get it wrong, we are going to have to apologize and pay some form of restitution to these people who are actually citizens. But that means we can't afford to be the world's police. We can't afford to go on down the road to another person's house and home and do renovations when we have a big hole in our living room. There's a big giant hole sitting in our living room, and there's water, leaking and flooding the basement. And here we are going down to the neighbor around the corner and saying, hey, man, we want to work. We got time to just hobby around and renovate your living room. Can I use the word retarded? Is that politically incorrect? Because it's the only word I see fit. That is retarded. We have a huge gaping hole in our own living room, and we're around the corner at somebody else's house trying to renovate their home. We don't have time or money to be renovating anybody else's homes right now. Are you feeling me? Am I tripping? Am I crazy? 2 hours. Am I crazy? Because there's a lot of Minnesotans. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of people in my own personal life who try to act like I'm crazy, who say, oh, Royce, listen to that guy. He's a loon. I saw somebody, a Republican on X. Oh, that Royce White is a loon. What's loony about America First? Now, you know what's loony? You know what I find loony? I find it loony that we believe we are $38 trillion in debt, $172 trillion in unfunded liabilities. Your average American citizen can't put together $500 to $600 cash in a financial crisis, and yet we still find some way to send our money to anybody else. That's loony. But it's accepted as American foreign policy. We're not the world's police. We don't want to be the world's police. That's what the beating heart of the MAGA movement is about. The only way we make America great again is if America is the first priority. Our people, our citizens, our country, our roads, our hospitals, our schools, our children, our medicine, our food. Make America great again. Make Minnesota great again. Americans must come first. It's not racist. It's not xenophobic. It's not anti-Semitic. It's prudent. It's realistic. It's been an honor to be here again with you this evening, hosting Sunday Night Live on InfoWars. I'm your host, Royce White, here from the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Congratulations to the great Mike Lindell for entering the race for Minnesota governor. And you can find my Senate campaign website at royce.us. Buy a Jesus is King t-shirt. God bless. God bless America. And Godspeed to you. Thank you.
I tried Methylene Blue, and instantly I bought a 9-month supply after that. I bought the Optimal Human Super Greens. I bought a 4-month supply of that. I bought Power Plant Plus, Methyl Drive, and Nitric Boost. And when I started all of this, I was 260 pounds, and I'm now down to 200 pounds exactly. And my testosterone when I started was 350. I was a low T, overweight, useless, straight Christian male. My testosterone 2 weeks ago tested at 1,004. So these products really work. And when you hear someone say, the Methylene Blue is energy, but it's not like coffee, I was yelling at my radio my TV or my phone going, what do you mean by that? What does that mean? Is it like a drug? Like, is it crack? Like, what are you talking? Listen, folks, whoever's on the fence about trying methylene blue, if you're 30 years or older, it's like waking up in your 20s. Like, I'm getting the chills just talking about it. I bought a 9-month supply of methylene blue because of how well it worked. I can't express the gratitude I have for you guys over there and producing these kind of products. And shout out to the late Art Bell for turning me on to Alex Jones in 1995. So thank you very much. These products really, really work.
Well, we appreciate you calling in about the products and much, much more, of course. We are thankful for that. So thank you, Doug, for staying on hold. I know it's been a while, so we appreciate you for that. So I want to remind you all again, as you heard, to head on over to thealexjonesstore.com because everyone's bragging about the items we have there right now, and they're 40% off. You got to head on over right now, this very second, thealexjonesstore.com. We're selling out of a lot of your incredible items. They're still fully in stock, but they're going to sell out soon if you don't get it now.